March has finally arrived. Does Purdue have a favorable NCAA tournament bracket? Or does it not? We'll discuss all of that and much more coming up on Gold and Black Radio. Kyle Chargers here with Brian Newbert. Brian in a moment, but first this.
Designing and building since 1968, T&W has changed the way people think about construction. T&W's three-stage approach to designing and building is unmatched throughout the construction industry. Learn more about T&W's people, passion, and projects at twdesignbuild.com.
Experience unparalleled comfort, service, and cuisine at the Whitaker Inn. This Midwestern oasis is perfect for a relaxing staycation or weekend getaway.
Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table. When it comes to land sales, it pays to have experts in your corner. AcrePro Midwest Farm Group is your local farmland specialist. With decades of experience in Indiana agriculture, no one knows the market better. Whether you're doing a 1031 exchange or simply buying and selling farmland, your local AcrePro agent will walk the land with you and ensure the deal is done right. Visit AcrePro.com or call 765-775-6502 and talk to your local land expert today. Again, 765-775-6502.
All right, Brian, the Boilermakers know their draw. They're the number one seed in the Midwest, playing in Indianapolis, and then we would assume Detroit if Purdue makes it past those first couple of rounds. We've sort of known that was probably going to be the seeding and locations for a while now. Now we know the opponents. I guess, what's your reaction to seeing Purdue's draw?
Yeah, I think they got a pretty good draw. I think we knew all along they were going to be a one seed. I think we knew all along they were going to play through Indy, so I don't think there was any suspense there. But in terms of the opponents, you never know, obviously. It's a funny game. It's a random tournament. But, I think the second round matchups, you avoided some of the teams with, like, super high upside. I can't claim to be an expert yet on TCU.
Right.
And
Utah State.
Utah State, thank you. Other than to tell you the fact Danny Sprinkle is about to take a Washington job in Utah State, no longer have their coach. But by the end of the week, I'll know a lot more about those two teams. I'll have researched them more. I'll have watched some film on them and things like that. And but as of right now, the thing that would have been a little bit unsettling would have been, like, if there was, like, a Kentucky, somebody who's got talent that far exceeds its seeding.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Somebody who can really score. That would have been one of the unsettling lower seeds. But from the best I can tell, I don't really see that in Purdue's initial draw. Now, obviously, once you get to the second weekend, provided Purdue can get there, that's when, you know, that's when the first starts flying, things like that. But, you know, having Tennessee as your two seed in your region, you know, you've beaten Tennessee already this season. That assures you of nothing if you meet again. But at least you know what you're getting into. And
yeah,
familiarity helps. Now, that goes both ways because Tennessee would know Purdue. But, you know, we are getting way ahead of ourselves here. Purdue's got to get through the first round first. That's going to be a non-story. People are going to, you know, flip out about that first round game. And there's going to be all sorts of blazing takes out there and, you know, stuff like that. But neither of those teams are going to touch Purdue. That's just the reality of it. So that'll dominate Thursday, which is the pregame media day for Purdue's Friday night game. And it'll be insufferable because people who don't know anything about Purdue will just write about how Purdue's trying to avoid a first round upset, you know, for the second year in a row. And it's not really going to be a thing, but it's going to be made into a thing. And that's kind of what Purdue has to sit in. I mean, that's kind of been the deal all year long, and they knew what was going to happen. They've been ready for it, and I think they're going to be pissed off. on Friday night. Not that anybody's going to beat their chest over blowing out one of the two teams that they would have to play should they actually win the game convincingly. I would bet that they would, but I also don't bet for a reason, but nor would I ever bet on the team I cover. But I'm talking myself in circles here, aren't I?
I think you're, one of your points is that you're super excited and looking forward to Thursday's media day.
It's going to be a deal where people are going to talk about the whole recent history. And we've tried to make it abundantly clear all season long that this is not the same Purdue team. You know, they are very much more experienced. They're very much more confident. Am I speaking proper English when I say very much more? Probably not.
We're going to, well, for this podcast, everything goes.
They are way more confident. They went way more experienced. They're way more mature. They've changed their offense considerably and been just as good, if not better. I think Zach Edey's better. Braden Smith is twice the player now that he was then. Fletcher Lawyer's better. Mason Gillis is better. All these guys are better. Trey Kaufman Wren is better. I think they're a much more complete team than they were a year ago. Lance Jones has really, really completed them, filled a lot of gaps, given them a certain levity that I think was really important that was missing last season at the end of the year. I think they're fresher than they probably were at this time a year ago. And I just don't see any real comparisons to be made between last year's team and this year's team. That doesn't mean what happened last year isn't part of this team's story, isn't part of what brought them to this place and made them into what they are today. But in terms of, you know, the whole same old Purdue storyline that'll get beaten to death this week, I just don't think it's a thing.
I agree with you that the teams that scare me in the NCAA tournament, aside these days from double-digit seeds, are the teams that have a very high talent level who have probably underachieved during the regular season. I think that that can be dangerous. Like you described, a team like Kentucky maybe fits that bill this season. But there doesn't appear to be, at least obviously, there doesn't appear to be a team like that in Purdue's side of the bracket.
You got Kansas as a 4. You got Gonzaga as a 5. Creighton as a 3 is a little bit disconcerting. They're pretty good. They can really score by reputation this year. I know Baylor Shireman's pretty scary. They've got Kalk Brenner at the basket.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd be running scared from any of those teams. I don't think Purdue should be running scared from anybody. When you look at Purdue's body of work this season, the only thing that has beaten them straight up has been their own turnovers. Nobody has beaten Purdue's best with their own best. And that doesn't mean that that can't happen later in the tournament. Doesn't mean it can't happen early in the tournament, but it hasn't happened yet. And it's been what, 33 games. So it really, I think this is a team that's more matchup insulated than, you know, probably any team that came before it. I think they can play a lot of different styles. I think they've been consistent enough as a shooting team to give you all the confidence in the world that that's going to continue. That doesn't mean that can't, you know, the floor can't drop out from under there at any time. That's the nature of jump shooting. But I really think that if Purdue just doesn't turn the ball over, I think they're going to be really hard to beat. Now, when you get to later in the tournament and you play those really elite teams, your best and their best, who knows what happens. But up to this point, this season, the only thing that's beaten Purdue has been turnovers. You know, it's been 20 points off turnovers, 19, 18, whatever it is, 15 against Wisconsin. It really is that simple. That if Purdue just takes care of the basketball, they're great on offense. They're good enough on defense. They're a great rebounding team. They snow you under with fouls, and it's a pretty good model, and it should be pretty compatible with March basketball.
Yeah, you would think so. I did not watch the Wisconsin game in real time. I was calling a baseball game And then very shortly after the Wisconsin game, I got very, very ill. I don't think those two things are related, though they could be. But, I mean, it was just as simple as the turnovers, right? Turnovers and then a couple of missed free throws at the end of the game that that proved to be the difference in the loss to the Badgers.
Turnovers.
Yeah.
16 turnovers, 15 Wisconsin points. That's the game. And a bunch of things that aren't going to repeat themselves happening, including Zach Edey getting 2 fouls in 1 second, a minute and a half into the game, or 2 minutes in the game, whatever it was. That's the difference between Purdue being tied at half and Purdue being up like 8 or 10 at half, and ultimately winning the game. The push off on Braden Smith there at the end of overtime wasn't a bad call. It was not a bad call. This wasn't the ref's fault, but it's just not a call you see very often, you know? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. That doesn't mean it wasn't a foul, but it was just something bizarre that you don't see happen very often. You know, Wisconsin had to beat the buzzer basically twice, you know, to win that game by 1 point. And, but if Purdue turns the ball over 8 times instead of 16 times, you know, Purdue wins that game going away. I just think that there's nothing predictive about how Purdue went out of the Big Ten tournament heading into the NCAA tournament. I just think it really is that simple.
Yeah.
That the common denominator between the four losses this season has been just the turnovers and the points off turnovers. It really is that simple.
Does Braden Smith, in your opinion and with your eyesight, appear to be fine?
Fine might be a strong word. I'm sure there's probably some consideration to be given to that. Still hands out 10 assists. I mean, he looked okay. He would never say whether or not he's not okay. Never, ever. But I don't think it was a factor in that game, and I don't think it'll be a factor in the NCAA tournament either. You know, it's the time of year too where, you know, players and coaches say this. It sounds like a trope, but I think it's true. Everybody's, you know, got some miles on their tires and things like that. Everybody's fighting something, and he's a pretty tough kid, and I think you'll see something close to his very best in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, he could be missing his leg, I think. And he would look down at it and be like, no, I'm fine. No.
Well, he couldn't hide that from us.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Give us some credit. Like, I think we would notice that. And when we noticed it, we would write it. We would completely disregard what he would say about it afterwards because we could see it.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I thought your column this morning was interesting, as it usually is, just in the comparison of Purdue sort of as the Cinderella, if you will, or the underdog maybe, in that Purdue has not made a Final Four since 1980. By some of the national media type people compared to what you find with Dougie 98256 on Twitter, who hates Zach Edey and wants Purdue to lose every game and wants Zach Edey to suffer some horrible injury or something. What has caused this strange social media hate for Purdue? Why?
I think people talk about them a lot. I think overexposure can be a thing sometimes with turning people against you. But also, I think it's just ignorance. It's just stupidity. It's just, you know, it's just people trolling. Now, social media is not real life. It is a bunch of loudmouth morons in a lot of cases who drive the opinions of everyone else. And the everyone else, they're not watching the games. They're not studying the teams they're commenting on. They're just repeating what they've heard from other people.
Yeah.
I think there's too many fans covering these teams too. And I think that drives things in a lot of places. I think, you know, the I think we have gotten to a place as a national media with a lot of very, very notable exceptions, a lot of people doing very good work, but I think we have made things a little more salacious than they actually are. I think we've made too much, or I shouldn't say we, I don't, but I think a lot of things have been blown out of proportion. I think it's just kind of a toxic culture out there. And, you know, how Purdue can be the Cinderella and, you know, Darth Vader at the same time, it's just a really weird dynamic. And yeah. I think the Darth Vader part of it is just, it's not credible. I mean, people who know what they're talking about are the people who are analyzing Purdue correctly. They are, in a lot of cases, openly rooting for Matt Painter and Zach Edey because they know who Matt Painter and Zach Edey are. Yeah. I think Zach Edey is unbelievably misunderstood as a basketball player. People look at him like he's just big, and he's just getting bailed out by the refs all the time, when really the exact opposite is true. I'm not saying that he's not big, but that he's just a product of the officiating is just gleeful ignorance. You know, had Shaquille O'Neal come into the NBA at a time when there was Twitter and there was First Take and there was 24-hour news cycles and there was Field of 68 going on YouTube every single night with a salacious graphic and hot takes, you know, what would we be talking about here? Would we be talking about his footwork and agility and just the fact he was a one-of-one athlete for a guy that size? People would be saying the same thing about him. I'm not in any way, shape, or form comparing Zach Edey to Shaquille O'Neal. But I've also always said that if Michael Jordan came up in the sort of media environment and social media environment that LeBron James did, his legacy would be very different.
Yeah.
Because everything would be about gambling. Everything would be about him punching teammates. Everything would be about overexposure, people being sick of him, yeah. Stuff like that. It's just people grasp on whatever they can grasp on to tear down greatness. It's just the way this culture has become. And it's just weird, really, that, you know, you have this stand-up guy who's by every account, both observed and heard and all of this stuff, is as solid a dude as you can possibly get playing college basketball, who's been a great player, the best player in college basketball 2 years running, who has never gotten in any trouble, has never done anything, you know, controversial, who has never been charged with a felony, right?
yeah, it's good to point that out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Noteworthy.
How he has become this kind of punching bag in the court of ignorant public opinion, it's just bizarre. I'm sure there's some sort of insidious undercurrent to it that I'm not going to get into, but I think that from a basketball perspective, it's just weird. It's just ignorant. It's just gleefully ignorant.
I saw there was a comment that somebody made on Twitter just that was about in reaction to another Indianapolis media person, you know, talking about Zach and sort of the same message you're putting off there. And the person responded, yeah, but the reason why people don't like him is because he gets away with everything and the Big Ten officials cater to him. And I didn't respond, but man, I would just challenge anyone who holds that opinion to sit courtside for Purdue Northwestern and sit on the Purdue offensive side, right on the sideline, sit right there, and just watch what's happening in the game. Just watch what Northwestern is doing. And I'm not, you know, going to sit here and bag on Chris Collins. He's doing what he has to do to try and win the game. But what they're doing is some craziness. And well, it's a basketball.
You're screaming into the abyss because the people you're arguing with don't want reality being presented to them. The people you're arguing with might not be people for all we know. but no, it's, you know, those Big Ten referees who supposedly are the root cause of all his productivity and all of Purdue's winning are the same referees who decided the Wisconsin game by putting him on the bench 2 minutes into the game the other day by calling him for a double tech, a completely unnecessary double tech, 1 second after he picked up a foul on a rebound. That decided the game.
Yeah.
A lot of things happened there. A lot of things happened thereafter. But if Purdue gets more than 7 minutes out of the best player in the country in the first half, Purdue wins that game. I mean, that's I think that's pretty irrefutable. So let's not talk about how the refs are looking out for Zach Edey's best interests. That's just insane. And it's just purposefully stupid. Just purposefully stupid, gleefully ignorant, purposefully dumb, all of the above. But as I always say, and I said on this podcast at least a month straight now, this is not real life. You're arguing with people who are idiots, who don't want to know any better, who just are contributing to an absolutely disastrous sports takery culture we have right now. And it's really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate that it sort of guides, you know, I hate the word narrative, but it's one of the few contexts here where it's appropriate. It really guides narratives. It guides the way people perceive people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people get sick of Derek Jeter when they're winning too much. People get sick of Tom Brady when they're winning too much. Does that really matter in the long run? Probably not, but you kind of get to that point where you're so good you get hated. But the bizarre part of it is, like, Purdue hasn't really won on the biggest stage lately.
Right.
So he gets the hate for winning too much, but he hasn't really won too much in this context. It's just completely bizarre.
It is weird.
And arguing with it is completely futile.
Yeah. Well, we will get through Thursday, you in particular, because you'll be down there. Purdue most likely will get through Friday, and then maybe we can move on a little bit deeper into the tournament, and storyline will change a little bit. But we will see. They'll play the games and see what happens.
All they can do.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, yep.
At Purdue Federal Credit Union, it's about a relationship. A relationship that goes where you go, wherever you are in life. A relationship that's committed to free financial wellness resources, lower fees, and innovative digital banking solutions. Because we believe in people helping people. Let's build your financial future together. Purdue Federal Credit Union, your trusted financial partner for life. Federally insured by NCUA.
That'll do it for our podcast for this week. If you like the podcast, be sure to subscribe via your favorite podcast app by searching Gold and Black Radio and leave us a 5-star review. That'll do it for the show. For Brian Newbert, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Gold and Black Radio.